Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I appreciate it when a financial planner, a certified money coach, describes true wealth as money, yes, but also what money can't buy, purpose, passion, and unlimited possibilities. Two women in Terry's life had experiences that really cemented her direction in the world of coaching and money. We all have major life events that might leave us feeling stressed and possibly alone, and having a Terry on our team would be invaluable. We also touch briefly on estate planning. If that subject is on your radar, check out my conversation with Adam last week. Well, check it out after you tune into this week's conversation, of course. Listen now. When I mention retirement planning, what comes to mind? Most of you probably dream about how wonderful no 9-to-5 will be. You think about your pensions and any retirement savings plans you've opened. That's all good, and I do have financial advisors on to talk about money from time to time. Today, there's more. My guest today is a certified financial planner, certified money coach, and certified success principles coach. Therese, only we get to call her Terry, helps women create true wealth. Yes, money, but also, in her case, it's all about what money can't buy. Purpose, passion, and unlimited possibilities. Terry suggests a myriad of circumstances. Divorced or widowed. Early retirement. Forced retirement. Job change. A windfall. Caretaking an elderly parent. I could write a book on the high cost of that situation. They are all major life events that may leave you feeling stressed and perhaps alone. Despite all of that, you still have dreams for your next chapter. Shall we see what Terry has to say? Terry Nicholas, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Well, Agnes, thank you. That has to be one of the nicest introductions I've ever heard.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Terry, you tell the story of your aunt and the story of your friend. They're two different stories, but similar scenarios, dependence on a husband to provide and chaos when the husband was no longer on the scene.
Right.
I take it the two stories happened many years apart, but could you give us some idea of how they cemented your path to make sure women are financially literate?
Yes, thank you so much. And, you know, sadly, I have seen so many stories that are very similar to the ones that I'm going to share with you. It seems to be a very repeated pattern. And I believe I was put on a path to help these people because they keep like falling in my lap. But the story with my aunt, it's interesting. That was something that was a memory that I had buried for many, many years. And it wasn't until I started doing this work that it came back to me. So I was a little girl when that happened. It was in the early 60s. So, okay, you can do the math. Get out your calculator. Yes, I'm old.
I was there with you. That's all right.
And my grandfather had just passed. My grandmother was in her 50s and she was a widow. So she's going through the trauma. And her daughter lets her know that she's getting a divorce. And my grandmother's reaction was, who's going to take care of you? And my grandmother knew there was abuse in this relationship. This was a relationship that never should have taken place. My aunt had been warned. You know, she was a teenager, very headstrong, and didn't listen to her parents. Had it in her head that her parents didn't like her boyfriend because he was not the same ethnic background, which was not the case. My grandparents were not like that at all. But they knew he had a drinking problem, and they knew that never ended well. And she thought she could change him. Well, obviously that didn't happen. She didn't change him. They had three children together, and she was getting a divorce. Her children were young. The youngest, I think, was about three, if I remember correctly. She didn't even have a high school education. So this was a time when you did not have a whole lot of support around these situations, and people did not get divorced. It was a rare occasion back then. So my grandmother was beside herself. Who's going to take care of you? Who's going to support you? So my aunt basically knew she's doing this alone. And she got a job, traveled all over the country with this company, trying to, you know, get better jobs and so forth, but struggled for so many years. And then finally, the struggle just got the better of her, and she had a complete breakdown, and her kids ended up in foster care. We didn't know. Now, this was not, you know, this was pre-cell phone, pre-internet, all of that. These are young kids. They go off to foster care. And my cousin realized, she's like, geez, we've been here for a while and we haven't heard from anybody. So she went to a payphone, so I'm dating myself, and called our grandmother to tell her what happened. We didn't even know that she was in, you know, in the mental, basically a mental institution. And my grandmother collapsed. She's on the phone and she just fell over. Not, she didn't die, but, you know, was traumatized. So she called my mother that weekend. We made arrangements to go because they were out of state and to check out the situation. And then it was decided that for the summer, all the kids would come and stay with us. We had a ball. But this was, you know, the low point. And fortunately, she recovered. And then she later remarried, and the person that she remarried was an angel, just an absolute angel. And it was like if she had only found him first. But I looked at that, and I remembered, and something triggered that memory. And I thought, oh, my God, can you imagine how horrible that was for somebody to know they're going through this huge trauma? And that's the reaction they get, like, what are you, crazy, getting a divorce? You know, can't you figure it out? Can't you just work it out? And I just often think of her, and it just breaks my heart. She was a lovely person. She was very sweet and very kind and certainly didn't deserve the hand that she was dealt, although she didn't, you know, I shouldn't say, but I mean, she didn't listen to the advice that she was given. Then later, many years later, I had a situation with somebody else whose husband died very suddenly, and she had been the breadwinner, but she had no idea of how he was handling the money. So after he was gone, all the bills came in, and she was in a mess. It took us a year to sort everything out. She's fine now. She's, you know, bounced back. But this was somebody who should have had her hand on the, you know, on the wheel, and she didn't. And it was just very traumatic to deal with a sudden loss and also dealing with this, you know, mess of a financial situation, which came as a complete shock. So those two examples that were very close to me, and then others, other folks that I've worked with, I thought, you know, I really believe every woman, everybody, not just women, but I think everyone should really have a firm understanding of their household finances, of what it costs to run their household, that live their lifestyle, what's going into savings. And I think it really starts with having a good understanding of what you want out of life in the first place. Like I call it your big, bold life. Creating a life that's filled with balance, joy, and fulfillment. And I think if you don't have an idea of that, you're just like a ship without a rudder and a, you know, nobody's at the wheel.
Yeah, those things are sort of like it's out there and mm-hmm. you know it's attainable, but like you have no idea of the root. But
right. And the root isn't as bad as we often think. I think we make things worse by ignoring the situation, but whether you like it or not, there is going to be a next chapter. The challenge is, are you in control or is it in control of you?
Interestingly, I listen to a lot of talk radio and I was sitting with my coffee this morning, knowing that we were going to be talking today, and a woman came on who was sort of the opposite of your friend, and her husband, they, you know, madly in love, got married, had, well, I guess just prior to having a baby, he was diagnosed with something terminal and fast. So he died when the baby was 1 month old.
Oh.
But he was one of those people, the minute they got married, he said, okay, we're making our wills, we're doing this, and the next
really?
thing. And she now advises women. I don't know if she does the financial piece or not, but just because she really understood and appreciated how much easier that made it for her, with all her grief being a young wife and mother, and just so much that she didn't have to deal with because he had put all the ducks in a row and they'd done it together, so she knew what was going on.
No, it makes a huge difference, and that is a big challenge when people don't have their ducks in a row. Ducks never line up, by the way. If you've ever seen ducks, they're never in a row. So if you're waiting for that to happen, folks, you're going to be waiting a very long time because ducks are never in a row. But having even the basics, even something as simple as a document that where you just write out all your wishes, as long, giving your family something to go by, God forbid you ever get hit by a bus. That's the very bare bones minimum. Not everybody needs a trust. And I know you hear all of, about all these different documents. Not everyone needs all those things, but everybody at a minimum needs to give their family direction. And if they have assets of any kind, they should have at least a will
Right.
at a bare bones minimum.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, the proverbial
Okay.
elephant. Why is money such an emotional subject?
That's a great question, Agnes. I was just speaking with somebody earlier about that today. Money is an energy. And so many of us get caught up in the energy of money and we forget that it's just a tool. And having a money mindset where you understand that it's a tool, just like if you were hanging up a picture, you grab a hammer, it's giving it any more personality than that will always get you into trouble. So some folks use money as a control, some use it as a weapon, or they have things going on in their head that they've learned things growing up, like, oh, rich people are bad. You look at the movies, you look at the media, and how do they depict wealthy people? They very rarely depict them as positive. Like even like my one of my favorite movies, It's a Wonderful Life. The rich guy was the bad guy, right? Potter, he was the bad guy. He was this mean old man. He had all kinds of money, but he was mean. Well, there are a lot of people that have money that they're not mean. Money, whether or not you're mean has nothing to do with whether or not you have money. It doesn't matter. If you're mean, you're mean. If you're wealthy, you're wealthy. The two don't always go hand in hand. So understanding that money is a tool, it's one that we need to learn how to use, just like learning how to drive a car. You have to know what you can do with it because and not be afraid to earn it, because the more you have, the more good things you can do with it.
I grew up in an era, you and I are about the same age by the sounds of it. If I had asked somebody how much something cost, my dad probably would have knocked me,
Hit the roof.
well, he would
Oh,
have knocked
yeah.
me across the room. Why is it so taboo? Is that just because of history or?
I don't know why that is so taboo, like asking what something cost. I think that a lot of folks interpret that as rude. And I think it really depends on the way that you ask the question. Well, say, for example, I remember when my husband and I were first looking for our first home. Now, this was back in the 70s. This was olden days, old school. You got a newspaper, and the newspaper had a section once a week with all the houses that were on the market. It was the real estate section. And they didn't have prices. They'd show a picture and you had to make a phone call to the realtor, or if it was being sold by, homeowner, they didn't give you the address or the price. You had to call and get more information. Today, all of that information is right out in front. But it was not uncommon back then for a lot of things to not have a price. Automobiles, the same thing. If you saw automobiles advertised in the newspaper, they didn't have the price. Or if they had a price, it was some lowball price and it wasn't accurate. And then you'd go to the dealership and it would be something else. So I think that was a conditioning that was from our generation and previous. I think that the following generation, like the Gen Xers, they seem to demand more information. And they have a way of, and I don't mean that in a negative way, I think it's great. They just seem to have, and I think this is something we gave them as we were raising that generation, to have the confidence to ask those questions. I don't think we were brought up to have the confidence to ask those questions. Even things like applying for a job. You would apply for a job blind. You wouldn't even have any idea what the salary range was. Today, that information is public. So I think a lot of it, too, long-winded answer, but I think a lot of it was old conditioning that to talk about money in any way, shape, or form, even when it directly impacted you, was taboo.
And interestingly, even at this age, I don't mind talking about money, but if I am asking somebody the price of something, I usually say, I hope you don't mind me asking, but may I ask what you paid for that or something like that? You know, it's interesting how we... conditioning, it's always there.
And I think part of it is the way you ask. So if somebody had a new dress on and you went up to them and said, "What'd you pay for it?" they might find that a little rude. But if you had something that you were interested in purchasing yourself, like it might be a new sofa or something like that, and you said, "Oh, I've been looking for that exact thing. Do you mind telling me where you got it and, you know, what did you pay for it?" Something like that would not seem as personal. But I think it depends on what it is. If it was like something, a personal article of clothing or jewelry or something to that nature, people might take offense.
Well, and perhaps it goes back to the emotion that you started with, is that, you know, if you use that tone of voice of like, "What did you have to pay for that?" as
right.
opposed to say, "Oh, may I ask what you paid for that?"
Yeah.
You know, it's a different tone of voice and totally different emotion around those things.
Right.
Now, you mentioned money myths. I think we've already discussed a couple of them, but is there others?
Money myths. Well, we did talk about a couple of them that, you know, thinking wealthy people are bad, thinking that this is a big one that I see in my space. I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of them are in a holistic healing environment and they have a conflict between being spiritual and being financially abundant. So there's a real conflict there where if you are earning a lot of money or you're charging what you're worth, that's a bad thing. So that's a money myth that definitely needs to be debunked or you will go broke faster than you can roll out of bed. Knowing what we're worth and asking for it is a very difficult thing for a lot of people, but in particular, I see it more with women, that we have this barrier between knowing our worth and then asking for it and getting it. And that's a real myth, that there's nothing shameful about asking for what you're worth. Abundance is our birthright. You have a right to earn a good living if you're providing a quality service.
And I think too, you know, like even if your life, your person doesn't correlate with a lot of money, the other way of looking at it is I have all this money that I can turn around and help other people with.
That's right. Exactly.
Philanthropy is just so huge.
It is. And I think one of the things that people tend to get a little bit confused about, I guess is a way to say it. What is wealth? Wealth is not, there's not a dollar figure for wealth. What is true wealth? True wealth is when you have that sense of purpose, meaning, fulfillment, joy. You can't put a price on that. And no amount of money is going to give you that.
I can remember when my children were very small, probably 3, 4, and 5, something like that. An elderly woman at the mall, she was, I think I was just sort of sitting down organizing them or something. And she tapped me on the shoulder and she said, "Do you know how wealthy you are?" And I looked at her and I said, "Yeah, I do. Thank you very much." You know, because just
there are days when we don't feel wealthy when we're raising little children. But
yeah, we won't go there today.
There's such a gift and we wish we saved the tag. I'm kidding, of course.
Now, you also talk about Toni on your website. She was financially secure, but found the concept of retirement presented a void. Now, your words, Toni lived her life by design, not default. Can you expand on that?
Yes, I can. So Toni, oh my God, I just love that woman. She came to me during the pandemic, and the pandemic was a trigger for a lot of people that we realized how quickly the rug can be pulled out from under us. and zero control, absolute zero control over it. And she had been working over 40 years, never married, no children, and felt like, you know, is this all I want out of my life is just to get up and go to work every day? She didn't hate her job, but it was like, isn't there something more? So she came to me to figure out if she had enough money to retire. And I said to her, well, enough money for one person, enough money for somebody else could be two different numbers. Because her first question to me was, how much money do I need to retire? And I said, well, I don't know. It depends on how you want to live your life in retirement. If you're content to sit in a rocking chair and read a book, your life isn't going to cost as much as someone who wants to travel around the world. So let's figure out what it is that you want out of life, and then I can help you figure out if you have enough money. She had never thought of it that way. She just thought there was this arbitrary number, and when you hit that figure, you put the hammer down and you go home. So, you know, it takes more than that. So through the life coaching piece or success coaching, I helped tease out of her what it was that she really wanted out of life. And in that conversation, or the many conversations that we had, because we did this over a period of 3 months, we realized that her biggest fear was not whether or not she had enough money, but what is on the other side of that retirement fence. Not having children, grandchildren, or anything like that, she thought, what am I going to do with myself in my retirement? I'm going to have this empty existence. And by discussing the things that she really wanted, she hadn't given herself permission to discover that. She was somebody who, you know, very dutiful, got up, went to work, a very dependable kind of person. Her mother, she lived with her mother. She was a caretaker for her mother, and her mother had recently passed, so she didn't have that activity. And in our conversations, I realized she had siblings that are all alive. They all lived all over the country. She had nieces and nephews that she was very close to. So she had people. I think she kind of discounted that. And I said, well, if you had a magic wand and you could spend time with them in your, you know, let's pretend you put the hammer down, you go home, you're not going to work, how much time would you like to spend with your extended family, your siblings and your extended family? And she said, oh, I think it would be great if we could get together monthly. Somehow, you know, they come to me, I go to them, that like once a month we do something. I said, okay, so we'll figure out that one. And she said, but if they came to me, I need to do some updates to my home because it really isn't ready for company. You know, she had been so busy taking care of her mother that the house was kind of let go. So we talked about that. We figured out a plan around that. And then we got down to the nitty gritty and we looked at her money. She had more than enough money to retire. Even with a travel, you know, schedule that she wanted and entertaining and everything else, and she wanted to volunteer at the library and do this and that, I said, you have more than enough money to retire. You could stop working tomorrow if you wanted to. And she said, well, there's some things I want to get done. How about if we put a pin in it and we're going to pick a date 1 year from today, you know, from when we were talking. And I said, okay. And she did that. She followed through. I gave her a list of things to do. She had like all kinds of projects to get her house ready, plan travel, do this, that, and the other. And she retired. Well, sadly, she passed away earlier this year. So she had like 2.5 years roughly of retirement, and then she got sick. Her brother called me to tell me what had happened. And I'm telling you, Agnes, I was heartbroken. You know, I just thought of here she went from being terrified of what's on the other side of the retirement fence, as she put it, to being just excited. You know, having a purpose again, feeling like she had a direction, someplace to go, and then passing away. And I said, did she get to enjoy her retirement? He said, oh, yeah. He said she had a good, healthy 2 years, and then she got sick. But he said that he would talk to her frequently, and she'd always say, thank God I did this work. And I'm not saying because she worked with me, but because she took the initiative to get the answers to her questions. She said to her brother, if she hadn't done that, she would never know if she had enough, and she would have just stayed working. But instead, she had a ball. He said she called it her big adventure. And every time she'd have a trip planned or somebody was coming to visit or she had whatever going on, and they would talk, she'd go, oh, yep, I'm checking off another item off my big adventure.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, this year for this podcast, I actually have a theme, and it's that was then, this is now, design your own next chapter. So I really appreciate, yeah, the difference between design and default. That's great. Now, you mentioned pandemic. Now, you have an interesting talking point. Break your bad pandemic money habits and get back on track. What were the bad pandemic money habits?
Oh, my goodness. Amazon was just exploding. People were so bored that they made Amazon their new best friend. And every other minute, something was showing up at the house because I think it was a lot of, well, what the heck? We could be dead tomorrow. I might as well spend my money.
Well, and I guess we couldn't go out and
do anything. We couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't do anything. Like if we had a trip planned, it got canceled. You couldn't even replace appliances. There was the supply chain issues. You couldn't find somebody to come in and fix anything. So what else are you going to do with your money? And those bits continued. So, you know, we're back to normal now, folks. We've got to start, you know, really thinking about, we can think about tomorrow now.
Well, and I think, too, I'm big on shop local. So that's another reason why. Amazon is not my best friend. Let me put that right out front. What's changed in your work since the pandemic?
Since the pandemic, well, one big change is I see more people by Zoom than in person.
Okay, yeah.
And in the beginning, it was really difficult because, you know, people either didn't know the technology or they didn't have a Zoom account or, you know, it was like, oh my God, what are we doing? I have to do this online thing. And then they got very comfortable with it, said, hey, I don't have to leave the house. Look at all the money I'm saving on gas. And, you know, we became more comfortable doing work like we're doing right now. But I think the flip side of that is we got very comfortable isolating ourselves.
I was going to say, and we all became hermits.
We all became hermits. So I think that's been a big change in my business because I was so people-centric, like, you know, doing talks in public and you know, running workshops and doing all those kinds of things. And now it's difficult to get an audience to have people come to you. It's getting a little bit better. But it has been a challenge trying to get people to leave the house.
Okay, I have a note here, and I was trying to not have big, bulky notes, but I can't remember what I wanted to ask you. So my note is money mindset. When does it hinder? When is it healthy? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. So the money mindset, when you have that itty-bitty committee in your head that's always giving you negative chatter, things like if you find yourself saying to yourself, I live paycheck to paycheck. I can never save any money. Money doesn't grow on trees. Rich people are bad. That is a negative money mindset, and it shows up in your results. Because let's face it, if you think wealthy people are bad, do you want to be bad? You don't.
No,
right?
No. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm agreeing with what you're saying. Yeah. No, I want to be bad.
Right. So what happens? Yeah. You hinder yourself from becoming wealthy or from building wealth. And you're doing it all in the back of the brain. It's the subconscious. Those are subconscious limiting beliefs. So an example, my grandmother, my father's mother, she was a wizard with money and she didn't have any. Grew up, you know, got married through the Depression, raised her family, moved here from Sicily, left abject poverty. And I visited Sicily last fall and I literally walked in her footsteps. It was just an epic experience. But doing that, I saw the poverty firsthand. I saw the decrepit, you know, the houses just falling down. And this is 100 years later from when she left. So if she said it was poor then, and I see what it looks like today, it was pretty poor. So she left there so that she could build a better life for her family, you know, with her husband. My father was born there. Everybody else was born here. But if you met her, Agnes, and you talked to her, you would never know that she struggled financially. And it's, I'm not saying she didn't put on airs, don't get me wrong. She just had such a positive attitude when it came to money. She had such confidence that she would always be able to provide and create more than enough. Now, her level of more than enough is significantly lower than mine is or than probably yours is. But there again, she knew how to live below her means, even though her means were very meager. That was her mindset, that she could always create more than enough, even if it was saving a dollar. It didn't matter what the number was. It's the habit of taking a little bit of money and setting it aside. She had a goal of buying a house. They were living in this tiny, tiny place. And my grandfather was a barber. He rented a barber shop, and it was attached to this three-family, like, flat-roof tenement-style home. And she thought that was a castle. And she told my grandfather that if they bought that property, it would take care of them in their old age because they'd have the rental income. She had a real strong money sense, and she never had an education. She did not have a formal education, but she knew numbers. When my dad and his brothers and sisters would come home from school, she would have a column of numbers written out on a piece of paper, and she'd make them add them up both ways before they could go out and play. It's how she was. I mean, it wasn't being mean. She just would give them that exercise. But her mindset was very positive, even though she didn't have a lot. She had confidence. When she saw people that had more than her, she would bless them. God bless. You know, so she never felt like she didn't harbor any jealousy or ill feeling for anybody that was better off than she was. She was very generous. She shared what she had, and she provided, you know, help for people in her community that were worse off than she was. She was an amazing person. Now, contrary to that, you would think that here she is, the matriarch of the family, raising the family. She has four children, all of them raised in the same way, under the same roof. Three of her children even went into the same career. So they had like identical jobs. Only one of her children was financially successful because he adopted his mother's mindset. He lived below his means. He would save money. My father and the other brother used to tease him, call him cheap. He wasn't cheap. He knew what he had to work with. He knew what he had to do in order to get to the next day, where my dad and my uncle spent more than they earned consistently. They had this, I would describe them, Agnes, as people that go to an all-you-can-eat buffet that are gluttons. They never have enough. No matter how much is there, they're always looking for more, or they're looking for a shortcut or a way of, you know, kind of cheating the system. And as a result, both of them died penniless. My uncle's still alive. He's 93. He's still enjoying his lifestyle. So, you know, I see that, and I see that in my own family, and I've seen it in others. So how is it that all these people raised in the exact same way, having all identical experiences, have different outcomes because of a different mindset? One has a mindset of lack and feeling deprived. The other has a mindset of more than enough.
There you go. That makes sense now when you say it that way. Yeah. Your grandmother sounds like my mother. She had a saying that money was made round to go around.
Yeah.
And once again, had a finger on the pulse of our family finances. But in the days of, you know, you'd go buy like a bin of groceries and, you know, the old tills where they're punching the numbers in, she'd have everything added up in her head, including any taxes, anything at all, before the woman could total the till.
Yeah.
So, pretty crazy. Now, there's a lot of talk, and you've mentioned it, about limiting beliefs. Can you talk to us about those? I mean, you've talked about, you know, I guess they did have some limiting beliefs, but anyway, I'll let you go into it. How do they get in the way of successful life planning?
Well, it gets in the way because it's a barrier. So if you're always trying to get ahead, but you have a message in the back of your mind that you live paycheck to paycheck, that's going to be your result. That's going to be your reality, because we never like to lie to ourselves and we always like to be right, even when it hurts. So to change that, it's very simple. You just have to rewrite the little messaging, the MP3 that's going on in your head. I'd call it a tape recorder, but nobody else would know what I'm talking about. So,
this is the Boomer Woman's podcast.
Oh, okay. The Victrola.
Exactly. 78.
The 78s. I don't go back to the 78s. I think 45. But anyways, I digressed. So you change the message. And the way you do that is if you catch yourself with those thoughts, either say, hit pause, cancel, even if you have to say it out loud, and just say, I create more than enough with ease and grace. Or words that are going to shift that, and you keep telling yourself over and over and over again, I create more than enough with ease and grace, and that will then become your reality. And then before you know it, you'll be doing that.
You got that, folks?
It's an exercise. It's like building a money muscle.
Yeah.
You have to keep telling yourself positive stories. You can put them on post-its, put these messages anywhere that you can see them, repeat them frequently until you get it. It's just like, you know, if you learned your ABCs, you didn't learn overnight. You had to keep that rote method of learning. You have these very deeply ingrained messages in your mind that you've either picked up through your environment, through family members, through your own personal experience, and you have the control to change that, but you have to do it. And if you can't do it alone, find a coach that can help you with it because it can change your life.
Okay. I'm going to go off the money subject. I think I'm going off the money subject. What aspect of future planning is most neglected or overlooked in your experience?
Well, there's a few. One of them is getting their estate plan in order. People avoid that like the plague. And I've seen so many people die without an estate plan, and they just leave a big mess for the people left behind. Even if you don't have family, if you have anything, it's got to be settled by somebody. And you just, you know, it doesn't, I mean, I had an uncle that just passed away. He didn't have any children, just had us. But he died with a house, a condo, car, a little bit of money in the bank. And it's like over a year now, and we're still trying to figure this out. So bills are piling up. You know, things, his house went into foreclosure because we couldn't access his money to pay his bills. So that's the number one thing that I see people avoid, is getting their estate plan in order and doing it in a way that's thorough, meaning not only do you have, if you, you know, it's not just about the money or the assets, it's also about how do you want to, you know, do you want to be buried? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want your ashes sprinkled over the Bahamas? I mean, what is it that you want? What is the legacy? What are the footprints in the sand that you want to leave behind? And there's things that you have to think about that have nothing to do with money. Things like your digital footprint. We never had to think about those kinds of things years ago. You know, how is somebody going to cancel your social media accounts? How is somebody going to cancel your cell phone? Things of that nature. They need to have access to that information, and they need to have instructions. Do you have charities that you want to leave, you know, a bequest to? All of those things, even things like, I mean, this is going to sound weird, and people in our generation might not have this situation, but, you know, your what's the word I'm looking for? Genetic material. You know, if you donated to a sperm bank, you know, or you had your eggs frozen, we probably didn't. We're probably not going to have to worry about that, but these are things that people have to think about today.
That's interesting. Yeah, when you go, like, into that vein, because if there are offspring, for example,
right,
they may not care about you except for what is your genetic contribution,
exactly,
like illnesses,
right,
and chronic things and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, yeah,
right, right.
So, well, that's interesting. There's another little thing to pack into the brain.
So that would be number one. And number two is not saving for, not having an emergency fund, not planning for retirement. So even if you think I'll never retire, you don't know if retirement might be forced on you. So being prepared, at least to some degree, those are some things that I see people tend to avoid. But the biggest one is estate planning.
I'm going to throw a question at you that just came to me as you were talking. Many years ago, I was well aware of the fact that what I had bought and paid for in my house was sort of, it wasn't exactly money in the bank, but it was definitely mine. I also was well aware of the fact that my house could never be my retirement plan.
Right.
And a lot of people, A, think their house is their retirement plan, but now with all of the other things that are going on with the economy and, you know, yes, your house may be worth four times as much as it was 5 years ago, but your taxes have gone up and all the other, and our utilities have gone up, all that sort of stuff. What's your view of my house is my retirement plan?
Well, I think that's a tough retirement plan because you have to live somewhere. And, you know, if you sell your home and you rent, that's one thing, but then you still have to pay rent. You know, or if you, you know, if there's two people involved, you can't exactly, you know, sell the house right out from under somebody else. So I think having a plan for maybe downsizing, that's fine. You know, you can certainly do that, but you're still spending money on something. So it's not a cash out. You only cash out when you take the dirt nap. So, and that's not much of a retirement plan.
You've got all these little expressions that I love. My mom used to call it a wooden overcoat. When you put on a wooden overcoat.
I never heard that one before. That's a good one.
What are the three things that my listeners can do today to help break a bad money habit?
Three things that you can do is, number one, be aware of it. You can't break a habit if you're not aware of it. Think about the result that you want to have in place of it. So, for example, if you tend to rack up credit card debt, ask yourself, why are you using your credit card? What's going on? Is it an emergency, or is this, you know, is this your Starbucks account? Really understand where you're spending your money and why you're spending it. If you're carrying debt month to month, that's a terrible habit. And the way to break that is you can close out your credit card and still have a balance. You just can't keep using the credit card. If you feel like you've had an issue with credit card spending, you can have an emergency fund card, like a card that you only use in the case of an emergency, and make sure that your limit on it is very low. So the most damage you can do is like, say, $5,000 or $1,000 or something like that. You can tell the credit card company, I don't want to limit higher than X. And that way, you know, that's all you can do. That's
interesting.
The most problem.
You say that. I'll interrupt you for a second. When I was first divorced, I had just bought another house, a small house for the kids. And I went into my bank and I said, I want a credit card just for backup. And I mean, this is going back a lot of years. So I said, you know, I had a line of credit, so I knew that was there. I said, give me a credit card with, in those days, a $500 limit. They had a bird. We can't do that. And I think they made me take like a $5,000 limit on the credit card. And I'm thinking, No, that just, you know, makes even important stuff, it makes it too easy,
right.
You know, and I
right.
was really surprised that it was still into the thousands because,
yeah.
You know, that can take years to pay off.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Very true.
So was the credit card, was that the number one? Because it was three things, was it? Acknowledge it.
Acknowledge it. Change your credit card limit. And be mindful of your spending. Be mindful of where your money is going.
I can remember when I first got my first credit card, once again, decades ago. Just deciding that it was a dangerous thing. I mean,
yeah.
It was really exciting because I was very young.
Yeah.
But I also did know it was a dangerous thing, and I decided I would never use my credit card for anything I couldn't return.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not a night out at the bar.
Right.
You know, that's not party. It's
yeah.
Just something that you can use.
That's a good rule of thumb. I haven't heard that one before, but don't use it for anything you can't return. Very good.
Okay, speaking of threes, what are the three C's of financial freedom?
The three C's of financial freedom are clarity, confidence, and cash flow.
Okay, so say that again. Sorry, cash flow.
Clarity and confidence.
Confidence. Oh, confidence is important, isn't it?
It is.
And that comes with knowledge.
It does.
Okay. I'm making statements with a slight small question mark at the end.
Right. Making knowing, having confidence that you're making smart decisions.
Now, your bio says you help women design a life they love, filled with joy, purpose, and balance. Can you explain the balance part of that, please?
Yes, I think that especially when I'm working with Gen X, our midlife women, they're the generation that's been told that they can have it all. And have it all is we can have the high-powered career, we can even earn more money than our spouses if we want to, we can raise a family, we can run a household, we can put on the superhero cape and fly off into the sunset. But it comes at a cost. And now they're like 20 years into it, and they look around, they've been climbing the ladder to success. They get to the top and they look around and say, is my ladder leaning against the right wall? And a lot of that is because they feel very out of balance. They just go, 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 get shot out of a cannon, land on the hamster wheel, run like crazy, lather, rinse, repeat. And that's not a balanced life. They're missing out on the true wealth. And if this keeps going on and on and on, they look around and wonder where their life went. So when you have a sense of balance, it's when you have the other things in your life that are not work related, that are really giving yourself space and time to just enjoy.
I have interviewed a number of somewhat younger women on this podcast who are doing what they do now, which is a passion project, because they did exactly what you said. They climbed, climbed, climbed. They got to the top. They looked around and they thought, like, I don't even like the view from up here. And so they jumped off the ladder. They found something that really lit them up inside, and went that route instead.
And life's too short not to.
Yeah, let's hope lots more people figure that out, especially those younger people, that just have so much in front of them.
They do.
Do you ever have women with all sorts of ideas, but like for retirement, for example, but they haven't considered how to bring them to fruition? So I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do the next thing.
Oh, all the time.
Oh, okay.
All the time. That's a very common thing. And a lot of it is they get overwhelmed. They have too many ideas. And that's where, working with them on goal setting, let's break it down like I did with Tony. Let's get this into a framework. Let's kind of corral all this information and really figure out what your priorities are. And what's the most important thing that you need to do in order to feel like your life had meaning or purpose or whatever it is that you're trying to attain. And I think when you work that way and you just kind of put a pin in everything else and you kind of just move that big rock and you get that sorted and settled, then you can see the light in front of you. I know that that worked for me. I actually did that. I went through that exercise, and I'm one of those people that has, big long list of all kinds of things that I want to do and finish and blah, blah, blah. And one thing that I've done for a number of years that I found very helpful is kind of corralling my information is in December, I like to take a few days and just think about all the things that I want to accomplish the following year. And I go through this exercise that I call keep, stop, start. So I write out what do I want to keep doing? What do I want to stop doing? What do I want to start doing? And then I would sort that out into like a goals framework. Well, last year I looked at what I had done in previous years and I said, I'm not getting anywhere. My goals are not, I'm not checking them off fast enough. And I realized the reason that was happening, Agnes, was I should focus on just one goal. And I did that last year. I said, which is the goal that's like the big, what I call the big, hairy, audacious goal? If I can get that done, that's going to move the needle for everything else. And that's a process that I was like, had that aha moment. And that's what I'm using now with clients, especially those that have a million ideas. Let's sort it out. Let's circle the one that's the number one. I help them figure out what that is. We go through a whole exercise of knowing what that is. And then let's just work on that, put a pin in everything else, and then we'll come back to it. And the satisfaction level has gone up exponentially by doing that.
This may be the same, only different. My former husband would get a massive, great overtime payout at the end of the fiscal year. And, in those last 6 months, it's really easy to know it's coming and sort of think, oh, well, now we can do this, or, well, let's do that. And I was smart enough to never do anything until the money was in the bank. But then you realize when you see the money in the bank that you'd need eight times that much to do any of those big things that you thought you could do.
Right.
Is it also true that if you write a list of, for example, all the things you want to do, and even just, you know, big bold print, put on the fridge, put on the wall, whatever you do, and look at it each day, that over time, some things are just going to get struck off automatically because that was important in the moment, but over time, it's just not important anymore.
Well, I think that does happen, you know, that we realize our priorities shift. But I think also that we get, it can be a little bit frustrating if the list is too long. So if you do find that you have a big long list, and I would say anything like, you know, more than 10 items is a big long list, break it down into categories and then just look at the categories and figure out which category is the most important and go there.
All right. I sort of jumped around today. I think it's hard to talk about purpose, passion, and unlimited possibilities without spending time on money. Is there anything we haven't talked about today that you want mid-age women to know or to think about?
I think the one thing I would like them to have as a takeaway is life is short. Make the most of every moment. And if you have questions about your ladder leaning against the right wall or what you want to do for your next chapter, or you're having trouble writing that next chapter, invest in yourself and get help with it, because you would be amazed at just working with a coach for even a short period of time can shorten your learning curve exponentially and get you from where you are to where you want to be much quicker. I know if I had the opportunity 20-something years ago to have a personal coach, my life would look a lot different today. I had to sort out and figure out an awful lot of things on my own that I wish now, boy, if I had a, you know, a Jiminy Cricket on my shoulder and guiding me along, or Glinda the Good Witch, you know, I would get down that yellow brick road and find the Wizard of Oz so much quicker.
Okay, that's a really good segue. What does coaching with you look like?
Well, I work with folks in three different ways right now, and there will be a fourth way coming out in the fall. So I have women that work with me on an all-day process. Well, it's like 5 hours because all day is kind of a lot. And that is my Get It Done in a Day VIP session. They also have an opportunity for a 90-day immersive where we work together over a 90-day period of time and chip away at their life and their goals. And then we have a 9-month program, which is the same as the 3-month, just extended out. So instead of working on like one big major goal, which we do in the 3-month program, we can work on several goals in the 9-month program. And then in the fall, I'm going to be doing a group program. So right now, everything's one-to-one. And in the fall, I will be putting together some mastermind groups of small cohorts so that we can build a community as well as support each other.
And this is online?
This is online.
Excellent.
Yes.
Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can find me at my website, which is wealthcoachforwomen.com. My email is tnicholas@wealthcoachforwomen.com. And I also have a Linktree address, which I can give you if I didn't give it to you already.
Okay. I'll get that into the notes. That's great. Now, when I was looking at your profile, I believe you have a special gift for listeners at your website. It's a financial freedom toolkit. What's that?
That's correct. That is a combination of three of my top downloaded items.
Oh.
And I give that for podcast guests and for podcast listeners. And what's included in that is there is a workshop about how to create your best life. There is my freedom, money and life freedom book. And there is, now I can't remember, there's a third tool. The journal. How the heck could I forget about my journal? Well, I guess since we're all in this age bracket, we can have these little brain cramps every now and then and
exactly.
Be forgiven. So the Financial Freedom Planner and Journal is a journal that I created that has a way of creating goals. It has a way of creating, you know, documenting your finances. And the journal piece is a way for you to give a lot of thought to the direction of your life.
I love journals, especially when they're really specialized directional journals. I think they're just such a good idea. Now, you're also on social?
Yes, I am. I am. LinkedIn is my big one. I'm also on Facebook. I do have a group page, and I'm in a lot of groups. So if you are a person that's in a group and you want to tag me or reach out to me, I would love to hear from you. I do a lot of posting in those groups, and I'm always trying to get the conversation going. I did a post last week. That was the first one that I really got, you know, a lot of like almost viral engagement. And all I did was ask the question, are you happy? So for all you listeners out there, I would love to know if you're happy. So feel free to reach out to me and let me know if you're happy.
There you go. Before we close, may I ask you a personal question?
Absolutely. How much was my sweater? Is that what you want to know?
No, I was thinking, though, that the top you're wearing underneath it, I used to have one of those as a teenager.
I love polka dots.
Oh, I didn't see polka dots from here. It just stretches around the neck. That's what I noticed. If for whatever reason, I have had so many guests on in the last few months from the Boston area.
More really?
Than any other area in the world. It's become very conspicuous. There seems to be a heavy leaning to the Boston meh side than the Boston yay side. So what about you? Boston yay or Boston meh?
Well, there's, you know, positives and negatives like anything else. The weather here is awful. The traffic is a nightmare. If you're a sports person, you'd love it around here because this is a real sports community. It's also a college town if you're into that. I would really like to be in an area that's more like in the country, a little more remote, like a small town. I would love to live in a small town. So I guess I'm meh.
Well, you know, I was there a couple of decades ago now, and I loved Boston, Cambridge, that whole area, and went down all the way down to Plymouth. And I would live there, well, back then, I would live there in a second. I was there for a week, but I can vouch for everything you said. Now, the traffic, I loved it. It's like there's a spot, I'm in it. But yeah, my son moved from New York to Florida back up to Boston. And when he went back up to Boston, I was raving. Oh my God, that's so exciting. And he goes, Mom, I moved from Florida.
Yeah. God, love him.
There you go. Okay. Website link is in the show notes. All of your links are on your page, at our website, including the special gift you offer. I hope people go check that out. Listeners, what are you thinking? What are your blocks? What are your concerns? Share your thoughts. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there's a question I didn't ask Terry. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Grab a minute right now. Go leave stars and reviews because they do help us grow. And share this episode. Terry and I talked about money blocks, myths, taboos, as well as joy, purpose, balance. Your friends may well appreciate hearing about any of the aforementioned. And a new feature, the Boomer Woman's podcast is growing. You can buy me a coffee. That's a pretty cheap option. Well, cheap given my taste in coffee. Or you can subscribe to Buy Me a Coffee each month, and that does gain you some, shall we say, age-specific perks. That link is in the show notes and above Terry's head on her page at our website. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is for free. Terry Nicholas, thank you for being my guest today and being so open about money and all the assorted thoughts that aren't fully thought out.
Well, thank you for having me, Agnes. It was a pleasure. And if you ever, you know, have a follow-up and would like me back, I would love to join you.
Sounds good. I just had my first follow-up and it was so cool. So yeah, that's definitely on the radar. Have a great rest of week.
You too.